was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome to Resurrectively Published. This is Eric the Freedom Screamer sitting in for Tom and Lori. Lori asked me to fill in this week. We will probably be seeing her back here next week, I would hope. I want to keep Tom in our prayers. Obviously, prayer is the most important thing. But we don't forget, we must watch well as pray, says the Holy Bible. And that means we must do as well as pray. And what I'd like people to do is call Attorney Jeff Sessions' office every day until Tom goes free. You can do it every day or at least every other day. Won't take but 5 minutes. Now, I'm hoping you're not going to have to do it every day. You're going to get a call back, but that doesn't always happen. I'll tell you, I'll give you the hoops to jump through for Tom. You call 202-514-2000. That's 202-514-2000. We need to put a whole bunch of calls on the Attorney General's office because he's the one that can have the case against Tom LaCavara completely dropped, dismissed, and as well as all the other patriots involved in these two episodes in Oregon and Nevada. And I would ask Mike on the board if he could get a hold of John Lamb. We'll have John in for the second hour. And I do believe Keith is going to sit in and join us tonight. Bevy of knowledge on the self-governing county. So once again, call the office of the new Attorney General, 202-514-2000. Let's not forget about Tom. I don't want to get too comfortable with this whole thing of him just sitting in jail with no bail and no bond, and both the state and federal constitution in this matter dictate that bail must be provided unless it's an allegation of a capital offense. Tom's not accused of committing murder. That's the only legitimate reason that the state could hold him with no bail. And he's being held with no bail for sitting in a room and having a gun nearby. That's it. So what you do when you call the office of the Attorney General is ask for the Director of Scheduling. This is how you get past the gatekeeper. They don't like the phone calls. I can tell they're working because they really don't. They're trying everything possible not to have to talk with people and hear their voice and actually make contact where, you know, you have a chance of getting through to their conscience. They want everything fax or an email or put it in writing in a letter, and that's fine. But you want to talk to ask for the Director of Scheduling and leave a verbal message that you'd like a call back with your phone number from one of the legislative aides to Jeff Sessions, and pack them full of phone calls. If they get enough pressure on this, Tom will go free. It's the only thing that's really going to matter. The attorney's going to sell them out. The system's going to circle their wagons and defy their own rulings, defy the state statute, defy the Constitution, which give Tom all kinds of protection. Tom should be allowed to walk right now and at least work on his case. I'm sure he'd show back up in court. He's not going to go on the lam as a fugitive. I mean, and he would face up to it and deal with it. I mean, they're just keeping him in a cage there so he can't prepare his own case, and he's at a complete disadvantage showing up in court and shackled by his hands and his feet. That's absolutely off the charts ridiculous. And so they're making an example out of him because he's a political prisoner, not a real criminal. And so, people, I wish you would call the Jeff Sessions office at 202-514-2000. Ask for the director of scheduling. You want to call back from one of the aides, and you want to speak to them about Tom's case. He must go free. This is patriot persecution. There's no victim to this crime. Society cannot be a victim. It's a fictitious entity, and that's fraud. And if they're charging possession, they're going to have to, they're not even accusing him of it. And possession requires actual holding. He was never holding any gun. Proximity is not possession. These are some points you can make. I'm just giving people suggestions on what they can say when you call. Because a lot of people say, well, what the hell do you say when you call the attorney general? Just let him go. It's nice to have a few points on hand. Possession requires actual holding. There was none in this case. Where's the victim? Society can't be a victim. It's a fictitious entity. Where's the man or woman that was harmed by Tom LaCavara? They don't exist. Okay, and that's just the beginning. So he's being abducted. And why is he being denied bail when both the state and federal constitution dictate that he must be given bail unless it's an allegation of murder? And he's not even accused of anything close to that. So there's the case for Tom once again. I don't want anybody to forget about Tom. If you care about Tom, please call the Office of the Attorney General one more time, 202-514-2000. Keep their switchboard busy. Keep calling them. Leave a lot of messages. They'll feel the pressure. The secretaries and the people in the lower, even if you don't get past them, they'll pass it on. The word gets around, and the more phone calls, the quicker Tom's going to get out. That's the main thing that we have on his favor right now is the public ear. So I'm trying to be the public mouth. And if you guys can be the public ear and then put your mouth to work over the phone, that would be fantastic. So don't forget about Tom. I would remind everybody that my presence on this radio show stands on scriptures, Psalms 94:16. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? Pretty clear. We all know who that is. So, we have Keith with us, and we have Chris, I think, in Las Vegas with us tonight. This is great. We have a nice little round table here. Why don't I bring in Keith to chat on some recent events or things that are on his mind that he's picked up through his recent research, things that are in the news, so to speak, or anything you'd like to comment on, and then we'll get all over to Chris here in a couple of minutes, if he doesn't mind hanging tight for a couple of minutes. Keith, how are you tonight?
Well, I'd be doing fine. I was going to say we also have another guest with us besides Crystal, too.
Oh, that's right. Do we have Dean with us as well?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so here's what we'll do. Let's, Keith, I'm going to bring you in first. We'll bring in Chris, then we'll go back to Dean, who's coming in with Keith tonight. And, everybody kind of take 3 or 4 minutes and then bounce it to the next person. So, and I'll try to abide by this as well. So nobody hogs the night. So there we go. Keith, go ahead, and then Chris, and then Dean. How's that?
Okay. Mike, can we have Dean come in with us then? Dean is another person of this pie, as I call it, of things that need to be done and things that need to happen so we can take back this country. I had a nice discussion with him about 3 hours earlier today, so and he agreed with me that both what he's doing and what I'm trying to do will work and enhance and make things better for everybody all the way around. So, what were you going to say, Eric?
Well, I was just going to say, I'm not sure if Dean is with us yet. Mike, remind me if he does come in.
I'm here. I don't know if I'm muted.
Oh, Dean, I think I hear you there, my friend. How are you tonight?
Oh, pretty good.
Dean, how are you? Why don't you tell us what's going on in your neck of the woods? You're down south, I think, if I'm not mistaken. You're down south somewhere, Virginia or North Carolina, and then we'll let Chris comment on whatever you have to say.
Yeah, basically East Coast. I'm in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, and
right.
we have sent paperwork into The Hague already to make Virginia on the land, not a commonwealth, not anything else. It's Virginia on the land, and that's where we're standing. we think we've got some other things to have to do, but we've got an assembly going. It's called the Union States Assembly, and it's at unionstatesassembly.org or .info. Either one will get you to the same place. And what we're doing is trying to bring the Articles of Confederation back in. That's pre-Constitution. So we have a law form that the military can get under without committing treason against anybody, because the military is supposed to be out there for the people, and we can bring them over to our side instead of being on a corporate side and get them to stand up for the people, which they think that they're already doing. So we need to bring on the first, the 13 original colonial states. Once we do that, then we can bring the other 37 in. And it's all getting people in and paperwork. And it's kind of like what y'all are doing, getting people in and paperwork.
Combination. Yep, 1-2. Chris, what do you comment on that a little bit? And then Dean can explain more about what they're doing.
Well, thank you very much, Eric. I just thought I'd share with you that I had the occasion to drop in on the Bundy trial for a while this morning after I faced another case I was on down there on the same floor, coincidentally. And it was rather surprising that once you had forged the original entry into the building and the magnetometer search of your body before you came in, of course, to empty your pockets, all that sort of nonsense. And I'd already been cleared at that point, went up to the other courtroom, and then whenever I aggressed there and went to the Bundy courtroom, I had to go through another magnetometer scan to make sure we weren't smuggling weapons in, that we couldn't get in from the front door. Maybe somebody smuggled one into us, another one. And I'm telling you, talk about a high-security operation. These people are just absolutely, at least they're acting like they're scared to death. And there's really no basis for it for whatsoever. This whole hypothecation of the danger of the so-called militia, these people with these scary guns that they want to claim are weapons, which if you know about the true definition in the Code of Federal Regulations for a weapon, it's only a full automatic pistol, a rifle, or a shotgun, all full automatic, or a sawed-off rifle or shotgun below 18 and a quarter inches. Other than that, they might be other purposes for percussion-driven projectile ejectment that are beyond that of using in military purposes, which is what a weapon is. It's a military term. It's used for aggressive purposes, as one of the witnesses, I think his name was Bracey or Breesy, something like that, who was there. Of course, Dan Love was noticeably absent, and many people were demanding that he be put on because they kept wanting to testify for what Mr. Dan Love had thought or said or felt, and there were many objections coming in from the defense team, appropriately, taking exception, and the judge was having to kind of sustain those because they were substantive, because the hearsay evidence of somebody else's opinion of what somebody else felt, thought, or how they handled something is preposterous, and it's unsupported third-party hearsay.
Right.
And the hearsay rule is very, very strong about that sort of thing, that anybody cannot tell what they heard somebody else say, because it's either second or three or four times hearsay, and it doesn't have any relativity to evidentiary value.
Amazing.
The buzzwords that the prosecution, the BLM, has been practicing utilizing ad infinitum are violent and weapon and fear and danger. All these incendiary word art terms that are hyper-inflammatory to try to ignite the flames of fear and concern into the jury so they'll feel sorry for these agency actors. They're bad actors. When we understand that the law of agency is what all these administrative agents operate under, when they get up there and they preposterously claim that they're giving a lawful order, and they may not even competently realize that what they're doing is giving an agency policy mandate for their employees, because agencies are private foreign-owned, for-private-profits, foreign corporations.
and therefore they do not issue law, and they can't operate under law. They can only operate under their foreign corporate policies of their corporation and corporation nation. And this is one of the unfortunate conundrums that these people that are so deep steeped in their agency policy, they don't even cognize, or maybe they're incompetent, or maybe they're consciously ignorant. Can't tell you which one it is, but it seems to be one of the three.
Yeah, willful blindness.
When they think they have the right to issue lawful mandates, well, agencies don't make law without going to the Administrative Procedures Qualification Act and putting out the notice and comment period. They can't just make up laws on the fly like that. And they already proved they didn't have jurisdiction up in Malheur. If they didn't have it in Malheur, I'll guarantee they didn't have it here in Nevada, because this particular section of Nevada that they were trying to assert jurisdiction over did not belong to Nevada until 2 years after the state sessional acts, whenever they ceded the unassigned lands to Corp U.S. as a condition of contract for statehood. Those lands came from Arizona Territory, which was former New Mexico Territory, and they were never under the original contemplations of land ceded to Corp U.S. in the condition of qualification for statehood.
Did you get all that?
Yeah.
That was as long as what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it, Dean. Fill us in a little more on what the American states or the Union States Assembly is doing, and some more comments on that. That sounds interesting.
Well, first, let me comment to you, Eric. Remember us having a discussion about the bonds, the high patrol or whatever it is up there in New York?
I've been working on it all day, and I have a very interesting story to tell on that about an encounter at a courthouse, bringing up the bond and having quite some interesting reactions to my bringing up of the requirement of officials, especially in New York, to have what's called an oath and a bond filed within 30 days of their commencement of their term. And I finally got it right here in my hand. This is real quick, so I'm going to read it off. New York Public Officers, Section 20, Action Upon Official Bond or Undertaking. There's the word bond. Section 20, Action Upon Official Bond or Undertaking, where a public officer is required to give an official bond or undertaking and special provision is not made by law for the prosecution of the bond or the undertaking by or for the benefit of a person who has sustained by his default, delinquency, or misconduct an injury for which the sureties upon the bond or undertaking are liable, such a person may apply for leave to prosecute such official bond or undertaking. Such application shall be made to the Supreme Court except as otherwise provided in this article. And I saw an attorney melt down today, literally throwing F-bombs across the courtroom when I brought that up. And it was fascinating, and I'll get into that later, but I don't want to get us too far off track. Been a busy day court observing here as well. It was fascinating
Eric, I brought it up because of the same thing that Dean and I were talking about for, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dean, but it was for North Carolina and Maryland, or was it North Carolina and Virginia? The same type of deal for people who were driving and other problems within that, for that part too.
So we encourage people, if you do have an encounter, especially in New York, but any and every state should check, because most of the statutes that are passed emanate from the model of New York. That's where all the laws kind of from the country start. That's where it all begins, and then every state pops up and puts a model kind of act on their books as well. So look up public officers law or civil servants law, and usually under one of those, you want to look up the oath and the bond clause. And once again, we found a judge that had one that expired 3 years ago, and he had to recuse himself from the case because we challenged him on it in writing with a filing that he did not want to accept. But I pushed and prodded and kind of just about made him take it without physically twisting his arm, and he actually took it and then had to recuse himself. And so you can have small victory, and that's a fairly substantial victory for the guy who walked away, because the judge had to recuse himself, and the county's not going to have much standing because he had already complied with the county requirements to have a permit to have a certain business on his property. So, anyway, that was very interesting.
Anyway, Dean, can you come in?
And Section 30. So, Dean, come on back in. Tell us more what you're doing down there.
Okay. Hey, can I elaborate on what you came in with at first about, you know, following the Bible and stuff? You know, people say, well, all we can do now is pray. Well, wait a minute. David didn't just pray. He picked up five smooth stones. He knew he could use one to kill Goliath, but he had four brothers. And Samson, he didn't just pray. He picked up the jawbone of an ass. He used what was handy. If we go to D.C., those things are running around all over the place up there. So it's easy to find one up there. But, you know, what we're basically trying to do is bring on a law form that's already recognized around the world. The Articles of Confederation have never been done away with. People say, oh, the Constitution superseded it. No, Constitution was, there's two ways to look at it. It's either a contract so that nine states can do the decision instead of all 13 having to do an agreement on things. Articles say that 13, Constitution said they have to have nine, and then it gradually increased as they brought on more states. But basically, that law form is still out there, and it's, those seats are there, they're just not filled. We've got to go back in there and fill those seats. And I was talking to Keith earlier today, and the best way to explain this is like, we own a McDonald's franchise. The franchise is doing so good, our families put managers in there to run this thing for us, and we all go on vacation. Somebody comes back from vacation and they find out that, hey, where's the Ronald McDonald statue we had? Oh, one of the previous managers sold that. We go on in the back. Now the deep fryer is gone. What happened to the deep fryer? Oh, another manager that came on after that first one, he sold those off. Well, where's the grill? Y'all are using fry pans. Where's the grill? Oh, another manager came in and he sold that off and make his fortune. So, you know, and that's basically what's happened to our country and our freedoms. These people have gone in here as servants, took over as owners, and sold off our freedoms, and we let them do it. Because we forgot what our freedoms are supposed to be. Now, here we are. We're going back out here trying to notify the rest of the family, hey, come on back here and help us go back in here as owners and take this thing over. Because when you see those documents and it says, we the people are we the owners. We're not subject to it. It's subject to us. And the people that go in there as servants are subject to us, not we're subject to them. They're not royalty. They're servants. So we've got to wake people up, change that mindset. And you were talking earlier about these judges. When the judges go against their canons, they have disqualified themselves automatically, immediately, by law, and they're supposed to step down voluntarily. When they don't do that.
I just read Section 20, which was a real brief action upon official bond. Listen to this, what you just brought up. New York Public Officers Law, Section 30. The last one was 20. Section 30 of the New York Public Officers Law. Creation of vacancies. Creation of vacancies. Every office shall be vacant upon the happening of one of the following events. And event number H says his refusal or neglect to file his official oath or undertaking, if one is required before or within 30 days after the commencement of the term of office for which he is chosen, if it's an elected office, or if it's an appointed office within 30 days after his notice of appointment, or within 30 days after the commencement of such term, or to file a renewal undertaking within the time required by law, except of such time as they're deployed overseas in the U.S. military, but if that's not the case, if they're here, they must file an oath and a bond, in Section 30.H, it says that this is one of the criteria for a creation of a vacancy of office, is refusal or neglect to file the official oath or undertaking. The undertaking is the bond, if one is required, which it is, before or within 30 days after the commencement of the term of office. So as soon as they're sworn in, they got a month to go get a bond, an insurance policy. But that costs money, and they don't want to do it. So they just all circle the wagons, and collectively, all of them at once, just like what we should do, everybody stop paying their property taxes all at once and then defend the first neighbor who gets the county tries to steal their property, and everybody just has to come to their defense by any means. And that's the way it has to be. But the system's very, very brave, and they're very powerful. They all at once collectively said, what the heck with it? We're just going to defy the New York Public Officers Law, Section 30, even though the creation of vacancies section, subsection H, says the refusal or neglect to file that oath or bond or undertaking leads to their term being vacant after 30 days. And every single one of them is in violation of that law. And every single one of them is operating a position that is legally and lawfully vacant. So every state trooper who's driving around in New York State right now is operating as a totally private individual because they're in defiance of their own law. It's in the state. Oh, and by the way, I found from 1881, and it's never been repealed, the oath, office, and official bond section of the state statute law of the state of New York, compromising the revised statutes, and it clearly states, and guess what? There's one line here. Let me see if I can get it quick enough, and I'll turn it back over because I'm not going to hog the night. The oaths of counselors, solicitors, and attorneys shall be taken before the court of which they are respectively officers, and shall be deposited in the office of the clerk or register of such court. So every single person who's got court right now ought to be going to the court clerk and saying, I would like to see the copy of the not only the judge's oath that he deposited before the court, because it says, well, let me make sure judges are included, counselors, solicitors, and attorneys. No, this is for the lawyers. So this is why I think part of the reason why I've seen so many meltdowns, especially today, the oaths of counselors, solicitors, and attorneys shall be taken before the court. So every lawyer in that courtroom is required under this, at least in New York, is required to have an oath filed with the court. Doesn't say a bond. There's nothing about a bonding or a surety or an undertaking is what they call it. Very interesting they use that word. Not surprising, though. But the oaths of counselors, solicitors, and attorneys. So that means every private lawyer, it doesn't matter in what capacity, or state lawyer, it just says attorneys, counselors, solicitors, and attorneys, and deposited in the office of that court clerk. So ask, go up to the window and say, hey, Mrs. Court Clerk or Mr. Court Clerk, could I please have a copy of the judge's oath as required under subsection 24.5, number 3. It says IBID part subsection 24.5. And this is under chapter 3 of the statute law of the state of New York. I believe this one original copy said 1881, updated 1923, never changed. We got a break. I hear the music. We'll be right back. This is Eric the Freedom Screamer with Keith, Dean, and Chris. Be right back. Stay with us.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Would odors, mold, and mildew describe your basement or crawl space? It doesn't have to be that way. Transform them into a fresh, healthy, usable one with the technologically advanced Wave Moisture Control Units. The computerized operation maximizes moisture control and also expels harmful radon, combustion gases, and numerous other pollutants. Dehumidifiers are old technology that do nothing for air quality and waste energy. Wave units are intelligent, self-monitoring, do not need maintenance, and will save you hundreds in electricity. Wave units are still running effectively over 15 years. They've been tested and installed in public and military housing and by property managers nationwide. Buy a unit now, and if your home is not fresher and drier, you can return it for a full refund for up to 12 months. What have you got to lose? Call now. 1-888-618-WAVE. 1-888-618-WAVE. Or visit mydryhome.com. That's mydryhome.com.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home. It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's I-C-A-N-G-E-T, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Mother of the moon, which built my sails, rose the sea of years. With no provisions, but in no places, oh, the straits of fear.
Welcome back, my friend. This is Eric the Freedom Screamer, sitting in for Tom and Lori. We have with us tonight Keith Jones. We have Dean in Virginia. We had Chris in Las Vegas, but I think Chris tried to be a nice guy and jump off the line to open up a line for somebody. We do have a caller coming up here. I believe it's John in, did I hear it right, Rancho Cucamonga? That sounds like an awesome place, dude.
Yeah, you got it right,
you
Eric.
Come in?
That's right.
You
right pronunciation.
Come in now. I can come in right now before I get off on going down some track here, and why don't you come on in with us, and how are you tonight, John?
I'm doing fine. I just had a real quick question for you, Eric. For those of us who are going to make a phone call to D.C. and try to talk to the director of scheduling for Jeff Sessions, it might be useful if we knew exactly which prison Tom is being held in the city and state, and if you also had an ID number, some kind of an ID number for Tom.
Excellent. Way to go. Good. Yes. Very good. Nice job. You filled in the blank there. That was, I do have the ID number and the county and all that. That's a very good point. Okay. So when we do call that number in Washington, D.C., which once again, this is the Attorney General's office, the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, you know, if happy days are here again, then we hope that he will set Tom free. He can do it. 202-514-2000, 202-514-2000. Okay, so it's Thomas Lacavara, L-A-C-O-V-A-R-A, That's V as in Victor. L-A-C-O-V-A-R-A. Lacovara. L-A-C-O-V as in Victor, A-R-A. Okay. And he's being held in Lane County. That's L-A-N as in Nancy, and then E, Lane, like right. The street. Lane County, it's right. It's where Eugene, Oregon is, okay, and there's a federal courthouse there. He's being held at the county lockup on a courtesy hold by Sheriff Byron Trapp, T-R-A-P-P.
Hang on. Slow down. It's Lane right. County, and it's in Oregon, and yep. It's a, you said a, what did you call the lockup, a courtesy?
Yeah, what they do is what the marshals take people like Tom to the county jail, and they ask the sheriff to do what's called a courtesy hold, and it, which okay. is a really just a, an obscenely bizarre term, because and it's very accurate. The sheriff is under no obligation to hold Tom. The marshals are just saying, hey, can you hold on to this guy until we can come up with something that sticks and keep his life? It's really how it's going. I know it sounds absurdly just so simply evil, but that's what they're doing. There's no, it's called a courtesy hold. I've heard it used before. It's their term, not ours. So okay. that's what they call it, a U.S. Marshals courtesy hold. And Sheriff Byron Trapp needs to be educated and realize that, well, according to LegalDictionary.com, I looked it up, sheriff,
okay.
the chief officer.
What city is it in?
This is the nearest city, in it's in Lane County, L-A-N-E, Lane.
Right.
And the nearest city, the biggest city, I think, in Lane County is Eugene, E-U-G-E-N-E, and that's where the federal courthouse is that Tom is taken to, but he's being held in the county lockup in Lane County.
Okay, well, I'll just say county lockup in Lane County, okay. And you got an ID number for him?
Yeah, here it is. Here's Tom's number at the county. 392-3405. I'll read it once again. 392-3405. The sheriff's name is Trapp, T-R-A-P-P. Educate him. He's the chief peace officer. He could let Tom go and just say, hey, show up in court. That's all.
Right, right. Well, okay, I think that'll help anyone who tries to call. At least we got some kind of specific information, you know, so...
Because I'm not really always complete with that. Yep, I appreciate what you did there.
That's all right. Okay, well, look, thanks a lot, Eric. I appreciate it.
All righty, John, hang in there. Thanks for calling, my friend, and appreciate it. We'll catch you next time. Chris in Vegas, if you want to come back in. We got, I think we have four or five lines, so Chris, you can come in and stay, and that still leaves us a line open. So if you feel want to bounce back in, Chris, in Vegas, feel free to do that. I wanted to read one paragraph, if I can find this real quickly, out of a book. Let's see, what do we got here? This is out of the Plutonium Files. I just want to take a little quick diversion here. I wanted to read this for a while, and it's I'm going to do it now. Many of the researchers, this is in regard to nuclear experimentation, the Atomic Energy Commission, the first atomic bomb. Leonard Sagan, a doctor who worked for the Atomic Energy Commission and the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission, or the ABCC, the organization set up to monitor the Japanese bombing victims, told committee staffers that informed consent often conflicted with the researchers' professional goals. Quote, doctors who were doing research, this is in, by the way, folks, this is in regard to doctors doing medical experiments on Americans without their knowledge or consent, and it was all radiation related. And here's their reasoning. This came from the head of the Atomic Energy Commission and the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission, Leonard Sagan. Doctors who were doing research wanted to be professors, and in order to be a professor, you have to have lots of publications. So your highest priority is to conduct research and publish it. You're the doctor. Here's a patient that you want to experiment on. Is it going to contribute to your research if you inform that patient? What can happen if the patient says, no, I don't want to do that? That's not your interest. Your interest is to have that patient participate. So do you tell him or her? No. Does anybody care? No. so you don't tell them. So that's why the ethical rules are ignored, because there's a conflict between informed consent and the ability to conduct research, and the physician is interested not in the patient's welfare, he's interested in his or her welfare. So he doesn't inform them that they're being experimented on with radiation by their loving doctors. And these guys are walking the streets today. These experiments go on. I know people today out in and around Rochester, New York, in regard to Strong Memorial, and that's also listed in the plutonium files here, Strong Memorial Hospital in Rochester, where human radiation testing was done on people without their consent. In an upstate New York hospital, an 18-year-old woman, believing she was being treated for a pituitary disorder, was injected with plutonium by Manhattan Project doctors. And to this day, I know people who are getting letters saying, can you come back in? You were experimented on in the 1950s. Can you come back in so we can do some follow-up research on you, research and analysis? And they still get letters to this day. It's ungodly. So anyway, the point with that is, how far bad does a government and the medical, which is always the worst, the milk, this is why they wanted everybody sucked into the healthcare program, because once they can get you medically, they can do experiments on you, they can declare you mentally unfit, which is a great, I mean, not a great way. It's if you're the enemy, it's the way they want to try to disarm people. Recently, I found out that 1 in 4 college students are either treated for or have a mental disorder. That's 25% of the young, healthy, what you consider, backbone of the nation. 25% of them are under a mental, some kind of disorder or treatment. And guess what? As soon as you go in that category, you don't own guns anymore. They put you right on the no-buy list, and God forbid you have any charges in your past like Tom does, and they end up scooping you up, literally kidnapping you, and holding you for the witch's court without bail. Very insidious what's going on with Tom. I want to thank our caller, John, from Rancho Cucamonga, who just did a great service and got me to give Tom's ID number and all the things I had forgot to give him before. So thanks, John. Anyway, let's get back to Dean and Keith. If Chris is with us, he can join in as well. So, Keith, do you have anything to say, or what do you want to ask of Dean? Why don't you and Dean take over for a little bit, maybe take us to the top of the hour, and then we'll have a break and come back for another hour after that.
Okay. What I was going to ask Dean, I know we discussed a lot of stuff today, but what I think would be good is if we could talk about a little bit what and how we can get these, how we get the states and start working with them, and how the people responsible or how we, get the states to come together for all this.
Okay. Hey, before we get to that, y'all were talking about disqualification of judges a while ago.
Yeah,
under judicial.
Yep.
Well, under the judicial code, 28 U.S.C., the double S, what's that? Statute 455. That tells you how the judge can be disqualified. And once a judge is disqualified, whether he's showing a bias, he don't allow you to put paperwork in, he don't allow you bail, he don't, any of those things that he can be disqualified for, it says here he is disqualified automatically, self-executing. It says the judge must be disqualified, and it's mandatory that he's disqualified. And
what is that statute?
Sui ponte, which is voluntary. They're supposed to voluntarily step down. And then another one is disqualified by law. Go ahead.
I just wanted you to read that statute one more time, a little bit slower, in case people wanted to write it down and research it.
Okay.
Did you know it, or were you?
Well, it's. I think the easy way to say it is Title 18 USC.
18
they call
USC
it judicial code. 28 here.
Okay.
28 USC.
Okay.
And then statute 455. I have to look at it real close, or my dyslexia will kick in. But
yeah,
if you go out and you look at that. What's that?
Going.
Okay. It says here, here's the things I've copied and put up at the top for quick reference. It's self executing means it's automatic. When they do something, they're disqualified. The only thing is, somebody in the courtroom has to point it out. it does not have to be the person that's called in there for the trial. And it can be somebody stands up as friend of the court, because the court is supposed to be on the people's side for justice, okay? So somebody can stand up as friend of the court and mention that this judge is showing a bias, or this judge is doing this, that, or another, and then these things kick in. Once it kicks in, it's self-executing, automatically disqualification. The second one is judge must be disqualified, and it's mandatory. And then sui ponte means voluntarily, and then disqualified by law. That means that all these things fall under by law, but you have to bring it to the court's attention, because if you don't, that man in that black dress will keep sitting, man, woman, whatever, will keep sitting up there because you've allowed it. Remember, we are governed by our consent. If we allow them to cheat us, they will cheat us. So we have to, we the people, the owners, have to bring it to the attention of the court that, hey, these people are, this man needs to be, a man or woman needs to be disqualified. Now, it says here, if a judge acts after his, he has been automatically disqualified by law, then he is acting without jurisdiction, and that suggests that the, that he is then engaging in criminal act of treason, because he's entering into commerce. And if he's entering into commerce unlawfully, that's treason. And almost, how many people that are taken to court to go ahead.
I was just going to say, for the most action that is taken in court is commercial. Even many of the violent crimes are listed technically, legally, in their system and their legal speak as commercial actions. Very few are in tort or under common law, because you have to show a victim, and they can't. The only way they can claim the state's a victim or society's a victim, the fictitious entity, is under a commercial action. And under those commercial actions, which you want to challenge, that's like Dean just said, you have to make the claim. You have to make the statement. We can kind of talk and complain a lot, but the statement has to be made either verbally and or in writing, always in writing, or they're really not going to hear it or see it. But backing it up with a verbal statement in court, as long as you're not being disruptive, please don't anybody go get arrested. There's so many people being sucked into the witch's court. I mean, I can't take it anymore. I've got... You know, of course, I'm doing the best I can. I don't want to see anybody do anything to get themselves incarcerated. Do your protesting up to the point, but not past where you're going to get arrested, because you're not going to do anybody any good in jail, folks. Sitting behind bars ain't the way to help the freedom movement. You're going to have to give a little sometime to be able to get a lot. Once again, you may have to get the driver's license to get down and pass out 1,000 jury nullification flyers over a 30-day period. That would be a huge things everybody could do is get down once a week on jury selection day. So you maybe go down 4 times in a month. You pass out a couple of hundred flyers each day, and all of a sudden you got 800 to 1,000 flyers out there, people knowing about jury nullification. And guess what? It saved their ass in Oregon, because the Bundys at least walked out of some of their charges that were against them up there. And the jurors said it was because of the jury nullification flyers and signs and chalking the sidewalk and wearing T-shirts, and that it got through to them, and they were able to realize that they can vote their conscience and let somebody walk free. So I just wanted to reiterate that point that Dean made. Make the claim. Stand up. Say it in court. If the only thing you can do is stand up and say it out, say, excuse me, I hate to disrupt, but I haven't been heard through my filings. I wanted to say for the record that, you know, and then make your statement. But make it brief. Once again, don't get arrested, people doing that. So... yeah, back to you, Dean.
Yeah, the biggest thing that the judge does when you bring this up, he threatens to get you for contempt of court. That is him going into commerce and trying to extract more money from you and lock you away for a benefit of the court to collect more money. That is an act of commerce, and that is treason. So,
Let me interject right there. The way they, listeners, the way that they make more money out of you in court is off what's called a performance and a payment bond, where every single case that comes through these courts, even the small traffic court cases, especially them, because they're in bulk, there's a lot of them, they bond every case. They're taking a policy out on it. It's called a performance and payment bond. There's a bid bond, a performance bond, and a payment bond. And there's actual forms. I think they're called GSA forms that you can file to get that. I have not been through the process yet myself, but I know what they're doing. I know what their scam is. They're bonding every case. They're making a whole bunch of money on the interest on that bond. So the more they can do what's called protracting, that's an insider term that, someone told me who used to work in the government. And a very large state, I think it was the state where Dean is right now, as a matter of fact, they're retired, and they said it's called protracting, and that means dragging it out as long as possible to make as much interest on the bond on that case. So that's why all these ridiculously small, stupid cases take forever. It's part of the reason they're hanging on to Tom. They're making money on him. Every day he's in there, they earn interest on his bond. That's really what it's coming down to at the most immediate, lowest level. But beyond it, it's government. It's an agenda of government control, political persecution, preventing a Patriot reporter from reaching his destination in Nevada for the trials and Oregon for the trials. So, but thank God we have John Lamb there. So if we have fortunate enough to get John Lamb, maybe at the top of the hour, Mike, we'll see if John's available for a daily update on the two trials. This is about the only place you're going to get it. I've been listening to some of the other media outlets, and nobody's covering these trials. I haven't heard anybody with a reporter on the scene. So I hope people value this, that we've got a reporter on the scene. John Lamb's doing an excellent job. So we got about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll talk with Dean and Keith here. Keith, if you have anything to say, you just chime in. I thought we'd give Dean a little extra time since he's our guest tonight and first time with us. And so, but you come in, you got stuff to comment on. You just feel free to just butt right in. And if Chris in Vegas, you're there, chime in, my friend. Are you back with us, Chris? Or Keith, do you have anything to say while we get Chris back on?
No, the only thing I was going to say is the comment that you and I have said, and I made the same comment, is when you go to court, if you want to really kick these people off for that trial, ask them for their 1040 form for that trial. Because they don't turn all
right,
that
exactly.
money in.
Yeah, all that money that they're making on their performance and payment bond, they're supposed to also be, I believe it's a 1099. I don't know. I'm not a tax expert. Their whole thing's illegitimate. But, they are making a whole bunch of money on the case, and they're supposed to be required to pay taxes on it to break their balls a little bit, so to speak, pardon the expression, and ask them for require that they produce that performance and payment bond and the subsequent tax forms duly filed with the IRS, which I'm sure the witch's court is not complying with, because they're the witch's court, just like the attorney yelling, screaming when public officers law section 30.8 revealed that public officers failing to file an oath and bond create a vacancy in their position, and they're operating as private individuals, not state troopers. And whoa, boy, you would have thought that you know what hit the fan, and I can see that would push the right. I don't use the word push the right button because it's not about button pushing. We struck a nerve. We were obviously right on target. The truth was being told. And if there's a defense against a lie, it's very easy to defend against. Say, oh, you're mistaken on that. Or, hey, that's a common misconception. That law is not applicable because, so-and-so's indemnified through such-and-such. And, oh, by the way, that was repealed in 1997 or something like that. But there's no, when it's just yelling and screaming, there's no, but we had the high ground. I was basically there courtroom observing for someone, and he called me in and said, tell my attorney what you told me the other day. So very mellowly, laid back, real straight up, brief, I just brought up the public officer's law, and he had a complete meltdown. So, to the point where, like, one of the bailiffs came over and was kind of laughing. We all couldn't believe it, because all I had done is say, under public officer's law section 30.8, any public officer failing to file their oath and bond within 30 days is vacant. The position is vacant. They're operating as private individuals. SHIT, it was unbelievable. So, anyway, Keith, let's bring back Dean. And hopefully bring a little, maybe some solution into this whole thing. But I had to tell people that story about the attorney having a meltdown when the oath and bond is a very potent, a bit of information and a tool you can use in defending yourself against these admiralty courts. And I know what Keith said the other day about we're out of admiralty law and back under common law. That may very well have been passed by federal statute, but, you know, it takes a while for the word to trickle down to the municipalities and the localities. So always bring that up. Every state should have a public officer's law or a civil servant's law, and people can look it up for their state. But in New York, it's very clear that the position's vacant if they don't file an oath and bond within 30 days after beginning their term. It's that simple. And we pushed the right button today, so back to you, Keith or Dean. What do you guys have to say about all that?
Hey, I've got one thing here to follow up on this disqualification of judges. Under the same code, only it's 45, section 45A, it says, section 45A is directly against the appearance of partiality, whether or not the judge is actually biased. So basically it's saying that they can't even put forth the appearance of bias. So that gives another feather for us to use under our cap, or use under our cap, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly,
But now, back to the union states. Basically, what we got to do is we need to find enough people. Well, we need to find a minimum of five people in every state to do the paperwork that needs to be done to bring that state on. We need to get the 13 on first, and then when we bring that on, that is for the people. Okay, that was before the corruption hit, and we have the, out there on their website, we have the information out there showing where all these congressmen, and we have a thing out there from a guy in Maryland, I forgot what it's called, but basically he had to go back and tell why he voted against the Constitution, and he basically was saying, they swore to us that, hey, we got these Articles of Confederation, and we swear we're going to uphold this. And then they come up with the Constitution, and they say, we swear to a higher power that we'll uphold these. And he basically said, they said this over here about this, and then they come up with this other document, and they say this, and invoke a higher power. How can we believe them? So he was vehemently against it, and it kind of explains that those documents were kind of shaky in the first place, and we're trying to find the letters. Somebody read the letter for us one night, and it was something along the lines of Washington telling some of his friends or one of his relatives or something, don't ask me about the legality of these documents, meaning the Constitution. So,
very interesting. I've got a comment. Yeah, that's very interesting. I want to ask you something about that. What do you think are the most important points of contradiction between the articles and then the Constitution? And we'll talk about that right at the other side of this break. This is Eric the Freedom Screamer with Keith and Dean. Talk to you after the break. Thank you for listening to RBS.
Okay.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.